Okay, and we are back. Glad you're along. Yes, we were working during the break. We're getting closer. We're getting closer. All right. Now, we're talking with Herbert Dorsey about a lot of things. I've always felt, honestly, for a long, long time, that there was something suspicious about Einstein. This is long before I heard about his job in the patent office, scientific patent office. Then I learned about how he had used the brilliance of his second wife. She's a genius mathematician. And that kind of made me, well, I was less than impressed. I'm beginning to suspect now that the Einstein cult is exactly what it is. It's a cult, and it's predicated on the cult of the man who knew how to market himself in the media. His hair was all teased up. You know the story. It's okay. But if this is all true, it's Einstein is less than important. He's a footnote. Well, I'm going to read this again.
Yes. Okay.
By Eric Dollard. Eric Dollard.
Yeah. Oh, why? Now,
hold on.
Jeff,
let me read this. Yeah. Go ahead, okay. Herb. What?
The reason I like doing this show is I believe in trying to educate the public about what is wrong with our present setup and educational system and,
right.
and you know, other areas too, but tonight I want to focus on that.
Let me read this. Go ahead, Herb.
Okay.
Sorry. Go ahead. We got a little bit of a delay.
One of my early interviews with you, you made a really nice video that went along with the vocal part of the interview, and in that video you showed pictures of UCSB and stuff like that. You know, it was relevant to what I was talking about, and I would just make a request that if it makes a similar video of this one, where you put in the material I sent you via Frank Chile as an educational means to, you know, so people who want to know more about what I'm talking about, there's websites they can go to find out more, just like the extra luminal transmission one that you're talking about. And so anybody who listens to this transcript later on can also see the list of websites, see what's wrong with the standard model of physics and how the ECE theory is a big improvement on it, and other things like that. You know, that would be a simple request that I would.
Well,
I'll
see if I can have my audio editor put those things in to a YouTube video on this. Yes, I will do that.
That would be nice, speaker, and I'd really appreciate it, Jeff. Okay, go ahead.
All right. Now, let me read this by scientist Eric P. Dollard. This is fascinating, and I've, like many of you out there, been aware of the astonishing mind of Nikola Tesla and others. It's just amazing when I read. I read this and I had to read it again. Wireless transmission systems are limited to the speed of light, but only if the signals are electromagnetic in nature. Tesla and Alexanderson engineered wireless transmission systems with no such limitations that were fully operational by 1917, thereby disproving Einstein's relativity before it was even generally believed by the scientific community. That's a mouthful.
I know.
That's how far behind we are.
And that's just the tip of the iceberg, Jeff. That's just the iceberg.
Yeah.
Okay. I was going to discuss a few more things that's wrong with electromagnetic theory, and then I want to get into free energy machines and how they can work. Okay?
Sure.
Okay. In electromagnetic theory, they falsely teach you what they call Maxwell's equations, but they're not Maxwell's equations at all. There's Oliver Heaviside's truncation of Maxwell's equations. His original equations had 20 different equations to explain electromagnetic theory, and Heaviside reduced that down to four vector equations. Now, I'm not demeaning what Heaviside did. He developed vector math, which made it much easier to understand what Maxwell was doing. Eric Dollard even says, what Maxwell, his original equations, most people wouldn't even be able to understand it or figure it out. And Oliver Heaviside was able to make it where it was understandable. But anyway, the truncated version, though, leaves out a lot of phenomena, electromagnetic phenomena. It is possible, but the reduced equations don't show where it could happen. So this has been a big drawback for electrical engineers. And one thing I want to just mention is a thing called the Coulomb gauge. The Coulomb gauge basically was set up to make things more symmetrical. But what it says is the divergence of the what they call the magnetic potential vector, it's known as A in electromagnetic engineering, the A vector. The divergence of the A vector is set to zero. The divergence is set to zero. And when they did that, they automatically made it impossible to unify electromagnetic theory as developed by Maxwell with gravitational theory. Because, see, the divergence of that, the gravitational field is directly related to that divergence of the A vector.
All right.
Okay, so that's just for your electrical engineers in the audience so they can figure it out. In my book, I have a book out there. It's called The Covert Colonization of Our Solar System by Herbert Dorsey. That's me. And I bring this up in my chapter on scalar physics. I have a chapter called Scalar Physics in that book.
Right.
And it's mainly for mathematicians, people with a mathematical background. But I show in there how not only is free energy possible, but also it also unified. I showed how you could unify electromagnetism and gravity in that particular chapter. And this was before I even heard of the Alpha Institute of Advanced Science or Advanced Studies. And later on, I found out they were also able to unify the two theories. And so, anyway, I just wanted to bring that up.
Let me just make a statement from the peanut gallery here. If all of this is true, and I certainly believe it is, we are so far beyond Einstein. He really shouldn't be talked about much, except as a footnote of early physics.
Well, okay, now the book that I just mentioned to you, The Covert Colonization of Our Solar System, what does that imply? What does that title imply?
Well, I follow you. You've been on a number of times before, and I get it.
Okay.
Tell our listeners a little bit more. Go ahead.
They have a secret space program where they have tremendously advanced technology. It's possible by looking into the stuff that I'm talking about tonight.
Yeah.
Okay, so they have anti-gravity. They don't use rockets for their secret space program.
We have a whole space fleet up there, as Bill Tompkins revealed on this program.
Okay, right. Exactly.
And I have photographs of a lot of these craft that were taken by John Leonard Walson 10 and 15 years ago in the UK. They're in orbit parked. Some of them, they don't look like sleek Commando Cody spaceships. They look like big pieces of machinery, but that's what they are.
They don't have to have spacecraft. If they're operating in space, they don't have to be streamlined. There's no air friction.
That's right.
Okay. But anyway, so they do have covert colonies and operations going in our solar system right now. And they have a colony on Mars. Corey Goods talked about that quite a bit, as well as
he's fallen into a little bit of a cloud lately. Just to FYI you on that, okay?
Well, I know I've heard the scuttlebutt.
There's a lot of stuff out there. I'd rather keep the conversation right where it is. So let's go ahead.
Okay. Okay. So anyway, there's a lot of advanced technology that's totally classified and kept secret from the general public. And they do have transmission systems that work instantaneously. They don't, you know, if you want to talk to Mars from Earth, takes, you know, if it's an astronomical unit away, it all depends on where Mars is in its orbit. But say it was an astronomical unit away, it would take 9 minutes for our signal to get to Mars. If we asked them a question, it would take another 9 minutes for the answer to get back to us. So that's almost 20 minutes trying to communicate something back and forth. They don't do that. They have scalar stuff that works instantaneously. Okay?
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Anyway.
So is that another thing we can put on the table and hang on to it, that scalar is almost a synonym for instantaneous?
Well, a scalar wave or a scalar electromagnetic wave is instantaneous, yes. You can put that on the table.
All right.
Okay. It doesn't have any speed of light limitation. Another book I wrote is called Secret Science and the Secret Space Program. I have chapters on free energy. I have a chapter on what's wrong with, you know, some of the science we got out there now, which, you know, and why I call it secret science, because it's not being taught in our school systems. So it's been kept secret from us. Okay. But anyway, in that book, I had a chapter on the German flying saucers that were developed by Germany in the 1930s and 40s. And a key person in this whole thing was Maria Orsic. She was a psychic medium who basically channeled these beings from Aldebaran, which is in the constellation of Taurus. And they sent her telepathically a whole set of plans for a flying saucer. But the instructions were in an ancient language they didn't understand, but they later found out it was Sumerian, the language of Sumerian. In fact, they called themselves the Sumi and claimed that they were the ones that created the Sumerian civilization.
That's where Orsic got her data. How interesting.
Frank, would
you please make sure you send Herb the video I put together with the actual piece of film showing a German flying saucer flying over the runway from above. That's a little piece of film that somebody might be a foot and a half long. We don't know. But it's stunning,
nice.
And I want you to see that. So Frank will
send it. I have to tell you, I've already seen a lot of videos of German flying saucers. I met Vladimir Terzersky in 1990 at a UFO expo in Los Angeles. And he supplied me with all kind of data on the German flying saucers.
Now, wait. I know of Vladimir. I didn't know him. Terzersky. I think he was on the program once, long time ago. Okay.
I knew him personally.
Did he give you actual black and white film footage of
he gave me VHS
German
videotapes. They were VHS videotapes.
All right, and this is motion pictures on video of German flying saucers.
Exactly.
All right, I would very much like to see that to compare it with small clip I have.
All my VHS videotapes are all no longer functional out here.
What
in
do you mean?
It raises Hawaii, it raises hell with videotapes. Salt water. We live a couple blocks from the beach. Get salt water contamination, all kinds of
You mean
of
your tapes won't play anymore? Is that what you're saying?
Nope, they won't play anymore. They haven't played for the last 10 years. I'm sorry. I've seen him. I've seen documentation that Vladimir Terzersky supplied me with. You know, he studied at the Russian Academy of Science, and he was living there. He was living there. He's originally from Bulgaria. He speaks fluent Russian. He was living in the Soviet Union at the time of what they call glasnost or openness, and all the secret programs that the Soviets have been involved in, suddenly the scientists were allowed to talk about them, and he was able to get access to a lot of the recovered German technology that the Soviets had recovered. You know, they got more scientists than we got in paperclip. Do you know that?
All right.
The Russians got even more than we did.
Wait. You're saying that the Russians got more German scientists than we did?
That's right. They did.
Sorry to hear that. I heard it was like maybe 30%. We got 70%. Our first director, NASA. You know who the director of NASA was? Our first NASA director.
The Russians got there way before the Americans did.
All right. Well, our first NASA director was for 13 years, 1962 to 1973, or thereabout, Dr. Kurt Debus. Dr. Debus was Hitler's man in charge of Peenemünde.
That's right.
And he brought Wernher von Braun with him and about 1,000 other German engineers and technologically brilliant.
But Germany had a lot more than that. Believe me, they had a lot more than that.
Well, I understand that. I understand. That's how they got their. That's how they beat us with the first satellite in 1957.
That's right. And I got other news for you. People that believe the Cold War was real, at a higher level of secrecy, the U.S. and the Soviet Union were cooperating in space. Did you know that?
Well, I think that I do know that the space program, as we have been fed it, has been a complete misdirection and a canard.
It was a smokescreen.
That's right.
NASA was a smokescreen to make people think we needed rockets to get out into space. When a portion of our secret government already had the German anti-gravity technology.
Right. Yeah. Okay. And it worked. It was a brilliant ploy. It worked.
It had us all fooled, including me. Okay. But anyway, I was going to talk a little bit about, I was going to get into I really did a thorough investigation of the real flying saucers that the Germans had developed using Maria Orsic's.
Let me say one thing, Herb, for the audience.
Okay.
There were two parallel German flying saucer programs. We'll call it simple.
Oh, there was more than two.
We could say anti-gravity, whatever. One was run by the SS, and the other was more of a civilian-oriented group led by Maria Orsic. Go ahead.
Right. Okay, Maria Orsic started the Real Society. She was the one who started it. And originally, her society was all female, and all the females had psychic ability. And they had the idea, we got these long ponytails, which were not in fashion at that time in history. But all her psychic mediums had long ponytails. And they claimed that their long hair was like an antenna that made them able to receive psychic messages much easier.
I still believe that. I think that long hair in general is another sensory organ that we are born with. And for some reason, the idea of hair cutting that extrasensory modality out of use is intentional.
Could be. That's why they only want all their military people have shaved heads, basically.
That's right. And I won't say that barbers are all involved in a conspiracy, but the net result is when you cut off the hair, apparently it does have an impact on some sensory abilities. That's
extra
what I'm
sensory. Extrasensory.
Yeah.
Okay,
yes.
Now, anyway, so I did a lot of research from many different sources, including Vladimir Terzersky, including a guy named Maximilian, who wrote a number of things about Maria Orsic. And I tried to find out, well, what's the working principle of these levity discs or flying saucers that Maria Orsic had channeled, but she gave the information to Otto Schumann, Professor Otto Schumann, who worked at the University at Munich. Schumann became famous later on because he discovered the Schumann resonance of the planet Earth. They call it the Schumann.
Oh, that's the same Schumann. All right, interesting. The Schumann resonance was it 9.37 or something like that?
Around, I think it's 7.8 hertz, something like that.
But it changed. It supposedly
it
has
can't
is
change,
higher.
Yeah.
Anyway, go ahead. I'm sorry.
But anyway, so Schumann was the one who developed the levity disc based on Maria Orsak's information. They were being financed by the Tool Society, which they had a lot of contacts between the Vril Society and the Tool Society. The Vril Society.
T-H-U-L-E for you listening.
Yeah.
T-H-U-L-E. And when you say
like
levity, that's a funny term, Herb. Levity disc.
They call it the levity disc, but actually the Germans had a different name for it. The Germans call it their otherworld flying machine, or they had it in German, it's called that. I can't even remember the German word right now. It's in my book. But anyway, the initials were JFM for F was Flug and M was machine, Flug machine. And I think it was Genzeit's Flug machine was what the Germans called it. And Genzeit means other world, and Flug means flying, and machine is machine. So they call it the JFM series. But a lot of them people call it the Searle Levity Disc. That was another term. And he was considered the father of the German, or the Vril Levity Disc, Schumann was. So when he comes to America in Operation Paperclip, he never has that distinction attached to his name at all. Isn't that interesting?
Fascinating.
It's all part of it's all because they want to keep it all hushed up and secret. So they don't want to mention Levity Disc or the Vril Disc or anything like that. So there's been a lot of secret stuff that's been hidden from the public.
Yes, indeed. All right. We have to pause one more time. We have a half an hour to go with Herbert Dorsey. And Herb's books are available. Just Dorsey, D-O-R-S-E-Y, easy to know and remember. Hang on, Herb. We'll be right back. This has been fascinating. Stand by. Talking to Herb Dorsey about a lot of very interesting and eclectic things, physics, and I hope we haven't left everyone behind. Believe me, I'm trying to stay up with it as well. It's an avalanche of fascinating material. The most important thing I think that we can reiterate here is that what the average individual perceives as our reality is perceiving a lie. We have physics, science, 20, 30, 40, 50, depending on the discipline, 100 years ahead of where anyone would imagine. We have deep space fleets. We have been all over the solar system. We probably have bases on Mars and have had for decades. We probably have bases on the moon. We probably know all about life on Mars. There's life on Mars. We probably know what happened to Mars. Maybe we figured that out. Something blew the hell out of everything over there because there's wreckage all over the surface of the place. That's the reality of what we're in. We're being kept back, if I can stretch this a little bit, we're being held back in what would almost be like the 17th century compared to the true 20th or 21st century. We're just lied to. They're keeping us captive. They're not allowing all of this advanced technology to come forward and help us save and preserve what's left of the planet. They don't seem to be concerned at all that the planet is dying physically. We're dying physically. We're not going to live as long as our parents. On average, mentally, the millennials and the others who are addicted to their phones, they're dying mentally. They're just not proactive about life. They're all now reactive, drooling, Pavlovian zombies. All right. Go ahead, Herb.
Okay. I was talking about the Searle Levity disc, and I wanted to know what the operating principle was. And I finally, after much research, found out what the operating principle was. And what it is, if you take two counter-rotating magnetic fields, and they're strong enough, you rotate them fast enough and the magnetic fields are strong enough, they also create counter-rotating torsion fields. Because every magnet is also generating a torsion field, by the way. Anyway, when you rotate these fields fast enough and they're strong enough, they create a separate bubble of space-time around the area that's affected by these fields. Now, what that does, it insulates everything inside of that field, that bubble, independent bubble of space-time. What it does is insulates it from gravity. So gravity no longer affects what's inside that field. It also cuts off the relative inertia between the outside space and the inside space. So you could say that this is not only gives the German Levity disc the ability to levitate off the ground, but it also allows it to do right angle turns at tremendous velocities, where your G forces are going to. They should be like way over 10 G's, which is about the limit that a human body can stand. Well, these guys are going thousands of miles an hour and do right angle turns. That would be like hundreds of G's. So
right.
How is that possible? Well, the inertia has been insulated by this field that you set up. And that's how the German Levity disc work. And I published that in my book, Secret Science and the Secret Space Program. That's in the chapter on the German flying saucers. Okay, now, what surprised me, when I wrote that, I didn't even know about the Alpha Institute of Advanced Studies. I didn't know about that. I found out about that a couple of years later. To my surprise, their advanced mathematical physics predicts the same thing with counter-rotating magnetic fields. So that was kind of like a confirmation of what I had discovered from my own research. So that was kind of made me feel better, you know. But anyway, now I want to get into free energy technology and discuss a few free energy concepts. My own houses, you know, are all solar-powered, so we already enjoy free energy anyway.
Right.
Solar is a very reliable source of free energy, and I recommend everybody get it while they can. But there's other technologies that generate free energy besides solar panels and wind and all that. And I'm going to speak about one principle that they always use to debunk free energy is, oh, well, you got the conservation of the thermodynamics, the conservation of energy theorem and all that. Well, I got to make a statement that only works in an enclosed system, a system that's totally insulated from the outside world. But there is no such thing as a closed system. Why? Well, we got a neutrino flux coming in from outer space. It's billions of neutrinos per second per square centimeter. I mean, it's tremendous. You know, so even inside of a vacuum tube, electronic vacuum tube, inside a cylinder of an engine, you got all these neutrinos coming in all the time. They go through the Earth. I mean, neutrinos are only slowed down by the planet Earth, so they can penetrate everything. So you don't have a closed system right there. But there's so many. So as Thomas Bearden points out, when you have an open system, it's possible to tap energy from sources in the outside of what you're doing because it's an open system. But anyway, I'm going to discuss a few of these open system free energy machines. And one of them is very simple. I can just verbally explain how it works, and any backyard mechanic could make one. You have this principle, it's called piezoelectricity. Piezoelectricity is you squeeze a quartz crystal and it generates a very high voltage. I mean, you can generate thousands of volts with maybe 100 pounds of force on one of these crystals, okay? So it generates a very high voltage. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's well known in physics. There's nothing secret about it. It's used in a lot of devices we have, like phonograph needles. They have microphones and all that stuff. Okay, so this guy named Milosavljević invented what I call a pendulum on a seesaw. He had a lever arm and two sides of a fulcrum. That's what a seesaw is, basically. And on one side, he had a pendulum swinging back and forth, right? Okay, now, the interesting thing about a pendulum is the downward force of a pendulum keeps varying at different parts of the swing of the pendulum. Like, when it's at the bottom of the swing, the pendulum is moving the fastest, and so there's more centrifugal force at the bottom of the swing, and that's added to the weight of the pendulum. But at the top of the swing, especially if you have one that swings through a half a circle of arc, at the top of the swing, that thing is weightless. It's like in a free fall at the top of the swing. So there's no weight. The pendulum weight is zero, acting on the arm, the moving arm of the pendulum. There's zero downward force at the top of the swing if it's a semicircle swing. And there's no centrifugal force because the motion is about to zero there. That's when it stops going up and starts to move down again. So you have no centrifugal force, and the physical weight force has also been reduced considerably, depending on, you know, how big of an arc the thing's swinging through. So anyway, this variable up and down force on one end of the pendulum is varied and transmitted to the other side of the seesaw. And say, like, you got a 10-foot lever arm on the side with your pendulum, and you got a 1-foot lever arm on the other side of the fulcrum. Well, your leverage is going to multiply the downward force by 10 in that case. So now you got a piezoelectric crystal on the other side, and this pendulum might be varying 10 by 10 pounds as it swings, just as an example. Well, that's going to multiply the force on that crystal by 10 times, so you got 100 pounds varying force, squeezing that crystal and then releasing and then squeezing it. And that creates a variable voltage. And you can run a variable voltage to a transformer. You can transfer that thousands of volts of piezo voltage down to maybe 110 volts or whatever. And then you're going to magnify the current because the piezo current would be small at first, but if you go through the transformer, you transform the current up as you transform the voltage down. So now you've got a free energy generator. You say, well, wait a minute, the pendulum will slow down due to air resistance. Well, that's true. Well, this guy named Bandini came along, and John Bandini, and I'm sure you're familiar with him.
I knew John, yes.
Yeah, okay. He developed a little bifilar coil and had two windings on it. And one winding was the trigger winding, and the other winding was the pulse winding. And these were wound around a ferrite coil that increases the magnetism quite a bit. And what happens is you put a little magnet on the bottom of the pendulum. And as the pendulum swings past this little coil set up at the bottom of the swing, it generates a trigger pulse. The coil moving past the magnet, or the magnet moving past the coil, will generate electricity in it. And that triggers the gate of a transistor, the base of a transistor, or the gate of a MOSFET, high-energy switching transistor. And it turns the transistor on, and that is connected to like a 12-volt battery. And so you get a brief pulse of electricity in the pulse coil. And that happens just after the pendulum goes just past the bottom of the turn. And so that pushes the pendulum a little further along on its course, that trigger pulse. It's oriented so it's in a repulsive mode to the magnet. So what happens is every time it swings past that coil, it gets a little kick, and that's enough to keep it swinging and overcome all the resistance losses.
Huh? Well, the amount of electricity, motion, huh?
The amount of electricity you're generating from the crystal is a lot more than it takes to run this little pulse coil. So now you're getting free electricity out of this little machine, and it'll just keep going now, as long as this thing doesn't wear out, which can be a long time.
Yeah.
Okay, that's one idea. Another one I'm going to talk about, Thomas Bearden's invention. It's called, he calls it the motionless electrical generator. And basically what it is, it's a flux switch. And there was, he got the idea from another guy called Timothy Trapp. And Timothy Trapp originally invented it. And Bearden got the idea from him. And basically what it is, you got a big permanent magnet sitting in the middle of this device. And then it has across a steel chassis that goes across the magnet, and the flux can go either two paths in this crossbar, it can go either left or right. And there's a little coils that you put on called control coils at this mm-hmm. point of the machine, and then further out, it's shaped like kind of like a infinity symbol, where you got two courses or two enclosed magnetic paths.
Got
and
it.
these little coils on top switch the flux from the permanent magnet through first through one side and then through the other side.
Okay.
And so what you have is from a permanent magnetic field, you create an alternating magnetic field. And that's what you need in a transformer to convert magnetism to electricity.
No moving parts?
No moving parts. It's just you have a little circuit that sends these pulses to either side of this circuit that first gates the magnetic flux from the permanent magnet through one path mm-hmm. and then through the other path. It alternates. And so one coil gets energized and then the other coil gets energized. And I actually built one of these in my lab. And
it worked?
I got it to... It did work. It got three times more energy out than in when I had it all in resonance. That's the other thing. You have to have it resonating.
Three times. Very good.
Three times more energy out than in. And another fellow, a Frenchman over in France, he has a website, Louis Nadine. He replicated the Meg, and he got about three times more, too. So we both got about three times more energy out than in. But... Thomas, I have to say that my electronics was very primitive. I was using a signal generator, and it only puts out about a 10-volt signal. So, you can vary the frequency.
Well, I want to mention in tribute to John Bedini. John, I guess we kind of became friends over the years. He was on the program many, many times, and just discovered and presented a lot of fascinating people. And their accomplishments. I've forgotten the names of them now. I'd have to look them up. But one guy was able to put a device in, basically driving a stake in the ground, if you will, and pulling current out of it. He lit up the whole hillside. And this is the 1880s where he lit
that was,
up.
He was using what they call the telluric currents of the Earth. There's actually Earth has
That's
currents
right.
running through it.
That's right. Yeah. Fascinating.
I'll say this about Bendini. I got my degree in electrical engineering in 1982. And in 1985, I read a book by Bendini, and it was also...
It's Bedini, not Bandini.
Bedini. Bedini, right.
Bedini.
Right, yeah. I read his book, and he had a plans for a free energy machine back in 84. He presented it in L.A. at Auditorium. And another fellow named Watson copied his machine but scaled it way up. And he presented it at a Tesla conference. And his Watson's version produced 10 kilowatts of electricity. It was pretty. But then he shut up about it later on. They got to him. And he kind of dropped off the stage after that. But anyway, that's all written about it. But then he wrote about it. But he's the guy who inspired me. I had a degree in electrical engineering in 82. In 85, I read his book, and suddenly I said, oh, my God, all the stuff they're teaching me in schools is totally wrong. There's actually is possible to get free energy. And that set me on my path as a free energy researcher, which I've been ever since 85. I've researched everything that's come out in the free energy fields. And he was the guy who inspired me to get started in that direction. So I give him credit for that. And Thomas Bearden, while Bandini was making the technical stuff, Bearden was explaining all the theory of how it worked.
Yeah.
And they kind of worked together as a team. And so then I got studying all of Bearden's stuff, too, which he was really a fascinating guy.
We had some wonderful communications. I tried to get him on the program. He said, Jeff, I just can't do it. They told me to shut up, basically.
Well, yeah. He couldn't even. He made all kind of kits, but he couldn't even make a kit for a free energy machine, or they would have got to him. He saw what happened to Watson, so he learned how to keep a low profile.
Yeah. Is Tom? I don't even know. Is Tom still with us? I don't know. He was fighting
Thomas Bearden. No,
health issues.
He's the late Thomas Bearden. A lot of these guys, like William Tompkins, passed away just recently. A guy that came up with the ECE theory, Marvin Evans, he just passed away just a couple of days ago. We're losing a lot of good men. Bandini passed away last year. It's really sad. All these people are all going to their
going
to heaven now.
I couldn't agree more. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, how much time we got left?
4 minutes.
4 minutes. Oh, my God. Well, there's one other site I want to talk about, Ben. This is called the KESHFoundation.org.
Keshe?
K-E-S-H-E Foundation.org. Keshe.
Keshe.
Yeah, you're familiar with him?
He's an Iranian.
Anyway,
Keshe.
He's an Iranian. He's, I'm experimenting with a lot of his stuff now. I'm actually making what he calls a gas in a nano state. I can take a gas like carbon dioxide and convert it into a white powder. And it's called gas in a nano state. And they created a name called GANS for that. And I've actually made it. And I bought some kits from them. It's very inexpensive. It's easy to do. And these GANS can be used for... we're using them on plants. They really enhance the plant growth a lot. But I also made a GANS called the CH3 GANS. And the CH3 GANS is like a brown color. And you can make batteries out of these things. You can make a permanent battery that just never discharges. And they only put out about a half a volt, but you can string 24 of them in series, and now you got a 12-volt battery that never discharges.
Oh,
you can tie a little inverter.
Yeah,
you can tie an inverter on that, and you can get house current out of it. So, there's all kind of interesting technology that this Keshe Foundation. Oh, I would be really remiss not to mention the fact that they've also got anti-gravity as well as free energy. So it's a site that's worth checking out. It's the Keshe Foundation. .org. I should have put it on that list. I didn't think about it until just now, so I wanted to give him a little mention, too, for people who are interested in free energy. He's also developed a lot of healing technology. Mm-hmm. It was actually, they had a program a couple of months ago. It was called the COMA program, and they were looking for COMA victims, and they had developed a way to pull them out of their comas. I actually sent a link to a Facebook friend of mine whose relative was suffering from a coma. So hopefully they checked into it and did something about it. But anyways, so it's well worth checking out. And these guys are going global. They've come up with all this. Another thing that these GANS can do, like the CO2 GANS, you can hang a little ball of it, put it in a little glass ball and hang it over a jug of water, and it totally purifies the water. If there's contaminants in it, it just totally purifies them. They're using this stuff in Africa so the Africans can get clean drinking water again. It's really catching on down in Africa big time. So, they've had a lot of advanced technology, and it's based on plasma physics. It's not based on the stuff that we're talking, the stuff I've been talking about. It's a whole new branch of science. And these are plasmas that operate at room temperature. These are not hot, high temperature plasma. And it's all been developed by this guy, Mount Ron Keshe. So I wanted to mention that too. I think we've covered a lot of stuff here, Jeff.
Well, I know we have. You've been a one-man orchestra here. Just extraordinary.
And I really appreciate it if you can get some of that info that I sent you via Frank Chile.
Right.
You know, when you make a recording of this.
I'll request that be done. Don't worry. We will.
Okay,
If you'd like to come back on and finish our conversation, you're more than welcome to.
It's a possibility. I'll have to think of some more material.
Sure, the door is always open, so it's here. Thank you, Herbert.
Okay.
Good to talk to you again, as always. Very, very well.
And you're doing a great job. I appreciate the job you're doing, too, to give us the world some alternate information instead of just all the propaganda we get from the controlled media.
Yeah, it's pretty sad. Thank you, Herbert, for that. Thank you very much. All right, you be well. Take care. Okay. Herbert Dorsey. And look for Herbert's books. They're out there. Dorsey. Okay, thank you for being here. It's Thursday night, Friday, tomorrow morning. And we'll wrap up the week in style tomorrow night. Hope to see you then.